Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have a great guest here to introduce. It's Anna McMillan, and she will tell us a lot of interesting things about entrepreneurship, but especially female entrepreneurship, and about her path to this, to a very successful life, but also a very fulfilled life and a very special life. And I'm very to have you here, Anna. We should have seen at Davos at the World Economic Forum, but unfortunately, there were so many people that we missed each other. So I'm more than happy to have her here now for the next couple of minutes. Thank you and welcoming Anna. We start with a song selected by her. So welcome to this great show and welcome Anna. We have with Anna today somebody who is very experienced and empowering impact investment lady. She's in ESG and innovation in health tech and agri tech, shaping the future, and founder of Women in Investment Network from UAE. So Anna, thank you very much for being part of our show today, to being my guest today. I'm very, very happy to have you here.
Thank you very much, Annabelle. It's a pleasure to be with you today and with your audience. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Anna, you are a very busy woman. You made your time for today, and I'm very happy about this because I have some very important questions to you, which we will discuss during the next hour. And we will talk later also about a book you brought, Principles from Ray Dalio, which might be also a life changer for some of our listeners here. And I'm happy to hearing more about it and sharing with the listeners also more about this book. So first of all, let's start with a question. Your career spans from venture investments to government relations. So what sparked your passion for impact investment, and was there a kind of defining moment or personal experience that led you to this field?
You know, Annabelle, I really love this question because it all starts from the fact that I started very early in life with a corporate career. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm a healthcare professional too. And well, I have always been in the corporate until one day I was introduced to the whole concept of innovation and entrepreneurship as a catalyst of innovation, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the first really, I would say, interesting experiences yeah. was as a founder in healthcare to hear things like, well, you should consider having a male co-founder, right, in order to be investable. Yeah. And, you know, I always believe that investments should be more, much more than just capital allocation. And it should be more of a force, you know, for systemic change. Yeah. So when we talk about, you know, government relations, that's definitely, I would say, an angular stone to mm-hmm. shape the future of investments and to shape how entrepreneurship receives those investments and how we shape policy to shape economies. So I would say, you know, in my work in investments, right, I think we have proven along the way that the right capital directed strategically can really drive transformation and innovation. So yeah, definitely. I think I would say a defining moment would be for me to experience firsthand what is to be told that maybe you need to reconsider how you're framing your project. And yeah. Probably the other thing would be, you know, to see that through impact investing, for example, we could have access or provide access to early diagnosis, or to provide different life-saving treatments at accessible cost. So I would say investments from there onwards became to me not only a responsibility, but probably even a mission, if you will.
Great. I mean, that sounds really perfect, because I think you are one of the women, one of the professionals who assumed and saw it very early how important healthcare is, not just from the governmental view, but also from the view that each of us needs the healthcare to go into the prevention more, but also that this is also something which is political. And if somebody like you don't activate in this field, then there is somebody missing, because we need more women with a voice which is professional. We need more women which come from different angles, and you are mixing this and bringing this all together in one person. This is, of course, super perfect. So, I mean, you have a very special view also. How have Dubai and Riyadh shaped your perspective on innovation, especially in sectors like health tech and agri-tech? Can you maybe share a story of a project or initiative that truly changed your outlook?
Sure. So I would start by saying that, first of all, healthcare or health and food are very much related. These are two industries that I would say feed each other, for a lack of a better term. And the way we have always worked jointly with the food industry from healthcare has always caused me to be very focused on the junction of the two disciplines. I would say, look, Dubai and Riyadh, both cities, are at the forefront of transformation. Dubai is a very interesting place because we are not in an adoption mode. We are in I would say we operate from the speed of innovation itself. And Dubai is a place that's making, you know, the boldest bets in technology. While Riyadh might go a little bit slower, but they are strategically driving long-term economic diversification, which is a step that Dubai started 20 years ago. So both cities are operating, and especially Dubai, from, I would say, leading the way, if you may. I think there's no other city, or there's no other country in the world rather than the United Arab Emirates, that has a ministry of AI, for example. Right. So in that sense, I think we are definitely driving innovation from here rather than being just adopters, which is a very good place to be right now.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And what I see from the development of what's happening in Riyadh, I think the world's eyes is going there, watching what's happening. And as and very surprised how far Riyadh goes, also in supporting women, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and also in the field of healthcare. So, sort of everything, which is, as you described it, food and healthcare, both as one branch. It's about feeding the people, nurturing the people, and being one of the most important branches, of course, right? So you
absolutely.
And you are not only an advocate for entrepreneurship, you're not only an advocate for innovative fields, for healthcare, for everything that is feeding us, that is driving the future. As a part of this, you are understanding that it's also about ESG-driven investments. So I think you can say you're an advocate for ESG-driven investments. What do you see as the biggest challenge in aligning financial returns with sustainability? Because this is still something people are sometimes questioning. And what would be maybe one practical tip for investors who want to integrate these principles without compromising profitability?
Look, I really love this question, and I would love to frame it within our discussion, because I think sometimes people tend to try and separate ESG completely from the conversation.
Exactly.
And when you look at what we are discussing here, is we are discussing healthcare, we are discussing food. And I'm a person that specialized in preventive medicine. So as somebody specialized in preventive medicine, you can't conceive prevention if you don't conceive it next to ESG. Yeah. For us, sustainability in the big scope of the word is so important because we are talking about prevention. We are not talking about palliative care. We are talking prevention. And ESG, I would say, is right now going through a major challenge, which is the challenge of perception. I would say many investors still view sustainability as an added cost instead of looking at it as a value driver.
Absolutely.
I think that's a very important misconception where we need to educate and advocate. And it's very important that we do this with hard and cold numbers because we can all sit and tell poetry here. But what's very important is that we sit with the numbers and we sit with the facts with investors. And you know, we need to put it in a way where we show investors that the reality is that ESG-focused companies often outperform their peers in terms of resilience, regulatory compliance. And the most important thing that investors look at is the bottom line. So when the long-term profitability is higher for those who are truly committed to ESG, I think it's a no-brainer. It's just a matter of finding the right way of implementation. And well, you just asked for a tip, and tip might be such a big word, but I would say one of the things that I have observed as a trend, and I advocate against it very strongly, is to use ESG as a PR initiative. Mm-hmm. I think it would be very important if we stop using ESG and if we stop greenwashing to just tick a box and just to fit into an agenda and look at it from a perspective more of risk mitigation and future-proofing portfolios, right? I think that's the way forward. And that would also require not only to have the right set of professionals educated and committed to educate investors, but also proving the value of it in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely right. I completely agree with you. And we need to work there a long path still. Because I can remember family office conferences where I was talking about impact investing. And some guys told me later, oh, Edward, that was a good, but I know you can talk also about profitable assets. So couldn't you talk next time about profitable assets? Where I was smiling the same as you would smile. Because, of course, everybody who is clever understands latest with numbers that this is definitely something which makes sense. And I completely agree with you. It is numbers, which is in this word, giving us the arguments, giving us also the confirmation. So we should use this, right?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's really interesting because for some reason that's hard for me to understand is that the perception is that any initiative or any incorporation of ESG policies would go against profitability when it's actually proven that it's the other way around.
Exactly.
So it's a matter of, you know, continuous education, continuous advocacy, and yeah, paving the way and risking sometimes be the odd duckling that's, talking on the corner about it with the hopes that with enough proof of what we are saying in the long term, this is going to be something that's going to be adopted across the board when it's, the time of choosing what to invest in.
That's right. One quick question
Yes.
before we turn into a small break. You come from government. What role do governments play in enabling venture investments, and how do you navigate these partnerships effectively? And can you share maybe one small experience where government involvement made a game-changing impact on a venture?
Yes, definitely. Well, I don't speak as government, but I speak as a person that works as a venture partner with governments. And definitely governments create the frameworks that allow venture ecosystems to thrive. Whether it is through policy, whether it's incentives, funding, infrastructure. So I would say the key to understanding partnerships with governments is to look at the alignment. Here in the Middle East, we talk about having a vision. We talk about in Saudi a vision 2030. We talk in the UAE about a centennial plan, right? And when you look at the alignment or when you look at putting the partnerships aligned to these visions, it's very easy to understand what are the government priorities and how to structure the investment based on that. And with the look or with the perspective of what would benefit both the public and private sector stakeholders. When we talk about examples, I would definitely look at in the UAE, we have a lot of government-backed accelerator programs. And this have helped startups in many ways. And especially when it comes to innovation, I think the UAE has done things in a very proficient manner by providing, fast tracking of regulatory policy and things that maybe in other places are not yet permitted, where we made the right kind of accommodations to make sure that this technology can thrive. We have definitely ensured from here capital access and support for market expansion. There are a lot of startups, for example, that came from smaller economies and where their market potential was quite small, but moving into the UAE, right, has provided them the possibility of working from here as a hub and accessing, international markets, expanding the market opportunity in terms of market size, servicing clients worldwide, right? So I think government partnerships are always a great way to go when it comes to innovation. I think it's definitely necessary. And I think that those who overlook at the need of these strategic partnerships with government face a lot of challenges when it comes to not only developing innovation, but implementing it. So.
Thank you so much, Anna. I'm looking forward to talking further. So stay tuned, and in a few minutes, we will continue.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I'm very happy to have Anna now with me. And she empowers impact investment, ESG, and innovation in health tech and agri tech, shaping the future as a venture enabler and founder of Women in Investments Network from UAE. And Anna, my first question after the break goes into this: as a founder of the Women in Investments Network, what key barriers do women face in the investment space, especially in your area, and how can we break them down? So also, what personal challenges did you have to overcome as a woman in this field, and what advice would you give to others?
Well, I think we need to answer these questions and to do justice to it. I think we need to split the question in two. We need to look at the question from the founder's perspective, and we need to look at the question from a female investor perspective or an investor perspective, if you may. I think when it comes to an entrepreneur, a female founder, always access to capital and networks will remain the biggest hurdle. Because investors, you know, they tend to fund people that look like them. And that's mathematics. We can sit and discuss as much as you want and try to fit a politically correct discourse. But the reality is that investors put their money on whoever looks like them. And that is a fact right now that, you know, the investments industry is a male-dominated industry. So and when this is a problem that we have in one hand, and I'd love to discuss even deeper if we had to, I'm not a person to focus so much on a problem, but to focus on a problem from a perspective of how to solve it. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's where, you know, the most important part of it comes. If you look at what are the trends in terms of wealth globally, by 2030, we expect that the majority of the wealth is in the hands of millennial women worldwide. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, that means we are having a whole generation of women that's inheriting wealth who are going to be driving investments. The problem right now, what it is mm-hmm. that there are not enough women in investment to serve our upcoming female investors. So mm-hmm. as an industry, we have a lot to do. We have a lot of homework to look at. And I would say once we are committed to bridge this gap, we would be looking at intentional capital allocation to female-led venture, where we say, you know what, I'm really interested, your startup is really interesting, but I have noticed that you don't have a female co-founder. Why is that? Right? And not from a feminist perspective, please, yeah. Not at all. But from a perspective of understanding that when you don't have a female co-founder, the problem is you don't have access to serve correctly a big portion of the market. So this is strategy and commercial market strategy. Mm-hmm. So we would be from the investor side looking at who are the initiatives, who are the startups, who are the solutions that are actually having enough people on the table representing both sides of the market. Not as a gender discussion, but as a discussion that makes sense to the bottom line of that equation. And again, I would think it's just, process where we need to shape more professionals within the investment industry to serve correctly all of this upcoming trends in the industry. And when we talk about personal challenges, I would think it's as simple as, look, a woman in investment has to, you know, prove herself twice, be three times more prepared, be four times sharper. You need to mind your tone because when you think you're assertive, they think you're aggressive. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that we are all learning and trying to navigate this industry. But if I had to tell women in just two words how to take it forward and how to make it happen for themselves within the investment industry, I would say be undeniable. Be undeniable, be impressive, you know, don't try to impress people, mm-hmm. be impressive yourself, be undeniable. And that's the only way that you can really open doors and keep them open on merit basis.
Thank you very much. These are really great tips. And of course, coming from somebody like you shows, I like what you said a few times. It's not from the gender perspective, or it's not the female entrepreneurship. It is about same rights. It is about also having this other perspective, because we are talking also about 50% of the customers, right?
54%.
Yeah. So it is just also kind of clever to embed them. It's a kind of clever to see the perspective. And as you said, we as a woman have to be over organized, over prepared, over with everything. And we are well known of having also the or some skills, which is more female, just as more organized, looking at the whole picture, bringing all people together, long-term thinking. I mean, even if this is in a special case differently, but overall, I think it gives some added value, and we should seeing that. You see also trends. So Venture Factory is known for fostering startups. What are the most exciting trends you're seeing in the Middle East startup ecosystem right away?
Well, like I told you initially, I think from the Middle East, we are driving trends, we are creating trends, and we are in an economy that's completely focused on driving change and be a creator economy. I think when we talk about what are the most relevant startups or trends in startups that I would look at are definitely deep tech companies, are AI-driven startups that are currently scaling globally. We can look at very interesting movements on the rise of fintech locally, where again, policy has been adapted in things like blockchain and in ways that we can actually progress at a faster speed than maybe it's currently possible in Europe or in US. I think we are doing great things in terms of ed tech, the future of work, and green tech. Green tech is phenomenal when we talk about agri tech, the things that, because you have to remember, we are in the desert, right? A little piece of grass growing here is a miracle, right? And I think all of these startups and these technologies being implemented correctly are, technology-driven miracles. So I think it's a great place to be in terms of innovation. I would say we have also seen a very interesting trend when it comes to logistic platforms, right, that from being a local solution have turned into a global kind of solution. So yes, I think Careem is a great example. It's Uber's competitor. So yes, I think we have great examples of trends that are being set from here and things that are being put in an experimental mode and successfully replicate in other markets.
Yeah, and you mentioned a few times already health tech. Health tech is one of the fields where you are also very skilled in and where you have a deep knowledge about.
Correct.
So health tech is a rapidly evolving field too. So are there some innovations, and if what innovations in the space excite you the most?
I think the kind of innovations that we are looking at are innovations that are fully focused on early diagnosis in preventive medicine, are different kinds of trends that are not just a healthcare trend, but a more holistic kind of view of health and well-being. We are looking at longevity medicine being advanced at a pace that was unthinkable probably 20 years ago. I think our generation is probably going to cross 120 years easily with the level of innovation that we are currently seeing. Of course, a lot of these solutions are being worked at closed doors right now, but that doesn't mean that innovation is not picking in those particular areas. And I think it's a very exciting time to be in. We are seeing a lot of trends also where we see how traditional medicine is being correcting itself through innovation, which is a very interesting thing to look at. Because I think as people in healthcare, we understand that healthcare is a very traditional and vertical institution where sometimes we are shy to innovate. I think when it comes to innovation in healthcare, I think we are going to see great things coming forward very soon, and we are all going to benefit. But I think it's all
What I like is, Anna, that you
from the preventive.
sorry.
Sorry.
Please go
Please
ahead.
go ahead. No, that's fine.
Okay, I mean, what I liked very much that you are not picking things, but you see the whole overall picture. This is something which you show at healthcare where you start about preventing. It is where you know what important role government plays in this field. You understand also the whole system where it's important to talk about agriculture. Food security is also there a critical issue worldwide. How do you see agritech playing a role in creating a more resilient food system, which might help us also for healthcare, for prevention?
Well, I think we have had a very interesting time during COVID, where I think was the time where a lot of countries worldwide had to ring the alarm and say, listen, guys, food security is more important than ever. And we thought we had it all figured out. We thought we had all our suppliers in place. Or how I call it, I have certain countries identified, and I call them the fridges of the world. And I think we did have that. But here from the Middle East, the perspective was, yes, we do have oil, and we are known for having oil. And but the reality is, each country has their own resources, and we are on a share resources economy right now. With the global economy that we are experiencing at this time. So the reality is, whenever a disruption comes to play into the logistic channels, we get to see what are the resources that are the most important for a community to, if need be, isolate, right? Thrive. And food security is definitely fundamental for any economy. And I think, again, during COVID, this was proven more than ever. We did, from the UAE, we were one of the countries where most of the population was having access to vaccines at the very, very early stage. But we had a lot of disruptions when it came to food supply. So yeah, it's definitely important to look at it in a holistic way, because healthcare without food security cannot sustain itself. And food security needs healthcare to be sharp and in place, right? So I think, again, these are things that go hand in hand, and trying to separate them would be a mistake.
That's right. So that gives us now one last question. If you could give one piece of advice to the next generation of investors and entrepreneurs, what would it be, Anna?
Well, I would think that when it comes to giving advice, I would think I would look again at two sides of it. I would say as an entrepreneur, you need to make sure that your solution is indispensable. When your solution is just one among many, you are not indispensable. Right. And when we look at, whether you're an investor or an entrepreneur, we need to understand that the markets will always reward those who solve critical problems. And you can be an entrepreneur or an investor to solve critical problems. The only difference would be who's putting the money and who's doing the execution, right? Yeah. So if I had to eventually put an advice forward, would say, trust a lot your instincts, educate yourself in the trends, try to understand the technology, and try to look at all the different industries in a very dynamic way, because every space we know right now is redefining itself, and it will no longer exist as we know it today in the next probably 5 to 10 years. So it's very important, especially for investors, to have a continuous education and commitment to follow with trends, not just with numbers.
Thank you so much, Anna. These were very wise tips for everybody, but especially for people who would like to step and will get entrepreneurs. So we have a small break now of approximately 2 to 3 minutes. Please stay tuned, because afterwards we continue with a great, great book, which is a maybe kind of life changer Anna brought here. So thank you so very much, and please stay tuned.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
I'm happy to introduce now a great book, but furthermore, I'm happy to introduce again Anna McMillan, who empowers impact, investment, ESG, and innovation in health tech and agri-tech, shaping the future as a venture enabler and founder of Women in Investments Network from UAE. She told us one book she liked to read, and I read it afterwards and were impressed too, because it should be on a must list of books for everybody. So it's Principles by Ray Dalio, and the ones who haven't heard about it, that's great. So Anna has the electronic version, which is of course typical for Anna, because she is very innovative woman. And I'm very interested, Anna, why have you chosen this book, or what brought you to this book?
Look, when you look at books, I think so many of the books that we currently have available are books that are fully focused on very technical aspects and advancement and in a lot of different things that have us a little bit disconnected from the basics. Mm-hmm. I think this book brings us back down to earth and makes us aware of the importance of going back to the basics, mm-hmm. and understanding that principles and values are definitely a driver for success, sustained success. And definitely, I think in the fast-moving world we are living, we have forgotten to live with simplicity.
Yeah,
because a lot of the points that the book talks about are things that probably our grandparents used to live by. We have somehow forgotten. It skipped a generation, probably in the frenzy of, you know, becoming the next millionaire or billionaire. And I think it's very important when we get our hands onto books that are roadmaps to go back to the basics, and how going back to the basics could be the easiest and simpler recipe for success.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. For me, Principles by Ray Dalio is a very transformative book that blends practical advice with profound wisdom. And also that he's very easy with sharing also from his personal story, his life and work principles. I mean, you have the feeling that he's inviting you into his home, into his emotional and analytical home, sharing with you his insights and making it in a kind of radical transparency, thoughtful disagreement, and data-driven decision-making, which has been a key to his success as the founder of Bridgewater Associates, one of the world's largest hedge funds, of course. And
yes.
And I think the book's strength is lies in its universality. Its principles apply to personal relationships, career growth, and organizational leadership. So it's, as you said, Anna, it's a kind of principle which you can adapt on. And I like it because, as you said, things are so complicated nowadays, and we often forget about the transparency, adaptability, and honesty about what means purposeful life. And we talked beforehand already about it. Purposeful or ESG sustainability doesn't need to mean it's not effective or it's not successful. The vice versa is the truth, right?
Yes.
And I think therefore I think it fits also so perfectly that you suggested this book because for me you're living this. You're living this where it comes together that you see purposeful live living healthcare the putting the poles together to see prevention is the key. And it can go hand in hand with successful investment. There's nothing bad about it,
Definitely.
right?
Definitely.
And I think, I mean, I like it also if you look at this. I just said Bridgewater. So Ray Dalio, he grew up in a middle-class family. His father was a jazz musician, his mother a homemaker, and he developed an interest in investing after buying shares of Northeast Airlines in the age of 12 and tripling his money. I think this his passion for finance grew, leading him to earn an MBA from Harvard Business School. And then he founded Bridgewater Associates in 1975 from his two-bedroom apartment, which grew into one of the world's largest hedge funds. Very known for his unconventional approach to management, he cultivated a culture of radical transparency. So I think we can learn from him that there is no just the way it should go. There are different ways, and it all has to be combined with you as a person, right? So
Yes.
I by myself, I put together 7 tips from the book from reading, and I would like to show this. Maybe you would like to extend or say, no, Annabelle, this is completely wrong. I read it completely in a different way. But for me, it was really that I said, first tip, embrace radical truth and transparency to foster open communication and trust, because there is no time for doing or not. Second, understanding that pain plus reflection equals progress. And pain is this what people often tries to avoid. Third, make decisions based on principles rather than emotions. And we often think, okay, this guy is bad, or I feel bad with this. So, principles guides us better through. Then cultivate meaningful relationships by balancing logic with empathy, and use data and systems to make better decisions, reducing reliance on intuition alone. And seek out thoughtful disagreement to uncover blind spots and improve decision making. And prioritize long-term goals over short-term satisfaction to build sustainable success. Would you say this is important, what I figured out, or have I forgotten something from your point of view?
I think it's very important that you brought forward the point about embracing a little bit of pain. I think there is a very interesting trend of stoicism that is being on a revival, and I think it's very important because especially my generation comes from a generation where comes from sorry from a background where our parents probably overprotected us and made us grow into a very entitled kind of culture. And we are so prone to, I would say, fast or immediate gratification. However, when we do that, when we follow that, we are ourselves damaging ourselves. Because we are preventing, okay, the space for observation, reflection, and correction. So it's very important, I think, that we focus a lot on the pain, I think it's very important you touch the point on systems. I think one of the things that we have also forgotten, the systems, I think in the name of innovation, we are trying to shift gears in so many things, but there are systems that can be adapted without needing to be changed. And I think these systems, especially when it comes to principle-based systems and value-based systems, are very important and should be protected at any cost. Mm-hmm. I would think it's very important to remain open-minded, to remain flexible. I think one of the greatest invitations of this book is the need of the hour for us, especially for all of us working in innovation, which is to increase our adaptability quotient.
Yes, go ahead.
I think as adaptable as we are, the sooner we can, correct course and adjust. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think, like you said, the book has a lot of wisdom put in a very practical and accessible way, where it's a great read for anyone that's looking at a way to break through.
Yes.
And to make it happen for themselves. It's a great roadmap, a very simple and accessible to read. Coming from a person with such financial background, one would expect a very complex book,
yes.
But this is very digestible.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I completely, I would use the same word, digestible. It's really something where you start and you're surprised how easy it is to read this, right? And
yes.
I would just read a little bit from this book that listeners can understand what Anna and I am saying or what we mean with that. So, work principle, garden stay and sink. Remember that for an organization to be effective, the people who made it up must be aligned on many levels, from what their shared mission is to how they will treat each other, to a more practical picture of who will do what they achieve their goals. Yet, alignment can never be taken for granted, because people are wired so differently. We all see ourselves and the world in our own unique ways, so deciding what's true and what to do about it takes constant work. Alignment is especially important in an 8-year meritocracy. So at Bridgewater, we try to attain alignment consciously, continually, and systemically. We call this process of finding alignment getting in sync, and there are two primary ways it can go wrong. Cases resulting from simple misunderstandings and those stemming from fundamental disagreements. Getting in sync is a process of open-mindedly and assertively rectifying both types. Many people mistakenly believe that papering over differences is the easiest way to keep the peace. They couldn't be more wrong. By avoiding conflicts, one avoids resolving differences. People who suppress minor conflicts tend to have much bigger conflicts later on, which can lead to separation, while people who address their mini conflicts can head-on tend to have the best and the long-lasting relationships. Thoughtful disagreement. So the process of having a quality back and forth in an open-minded and assertive way so as you to see things through each other's eyes is powerful because it helps both parties see things they have been blind to. But it's not easy. While it is straightforward to have a meritocracy in activities in which there is clarity of relative abilities because the result speaks for themselves, such as in sports where the fastest runner wins the race, it is much harder in a creative environment where different points of view about what's best to have been resolved. If they are not, the process of sorting through disagreements and knowing who has the authority to decide quickly becomes chaotic. Sometimes people get angry or stuck. A conversation can easily wind up with two or more people spinning unproductively and unable to reach agreement on what you do. For these reasons, specific processes and procedures must be followed. Every party to the discussion must understand who was right, and which procedures should be followed to move towards resolution. And everyone must understand the most fundamental principle for getting in sync, which is that people must be open-minded and assertive at the same time. Thought for disagreement is not a battle. Its goal is not to convince the other party that he or she is wrong and you are right, but to find out what is true and what to do it about. It must also be non-hierarchical, because in an idea meritocracy, communication doesn't just flow unquestioned from the top down. Criticism must also come from the bottom up. So recognize that conflicts are essential for a great relationships and know how to get in sync and disagree well and be open-minded and assertive at the same time. And if it's your meeting to run, manage the conversation. If it's not your meeting to run, follow the lead of the person who is running the meeting. So that brings us to an end. Thank you so much, Anna, to being here, also for showing and presenting the book Principles of Ray Dalio. And that brings us to an end of this show. And thank you very much to being here with us. It was great to have you here. So stay tuned for next week's show. And Anna, have a great weekend. So looking forward to seeing you all again. Thank you so much.